welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Tresidder from NHS Somerset, and I'm delighted to be joined by both my colleagues and both friends, Peter and Kate. Peter.
Hi, Peter Bagshaw, GP and NHS Somerset Clinical Lead for Mental Health.
And I'm Kate Staveley. I'm also a Somerset GP and a clinical lead for women and children.
That's great. And Kate, I'm not going to ask you how long we've known each other and whether we've worked together and have
34 years, Andrew.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, yes.
it's great to have worked with you in Chard all that time, and also to know your family. And I know our children used to swim together.
They did. And in fact, we share goddaughters, don't we?
We share goddaughters, indeed. Peter, I'm afraid we don't share any godchildren, do we?
No.
A more recent relationship. So here we are, episode 150.
Hang on, we need to introduce David as well.
I'm not lurking.
And I'm David lying. Is on camera. I'm so sorry. So David, our producer, and we've known each other 5 or 6 years, and you tell us, this is episode 150 of the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast, but David, tell us a bit about yourself and also a bit about you and podcasting.
I've been on a few in there. I think I've been a guest, a host, and obviously the producer lurking behind the scenes for all of the episodes. But I'm the commissioning manager for adult mental health and dementia for NHS Somerset Integrated Care Board. Had previously had another podcast with some friends before we embarked upon this venture, and that was a sort of music-based one. It's been since expunged from the internet because I fear legal ramifications of playing other people's songs and things. We did it very carefully, but anyway, so that's the background, and we came to do this. And I won't go into the history. If you want to hear about that, listen to episode 100 again. But we started during the pandemic and never looked back, really. And here we are 150 episodes later. It's crazy.
It's quite amazing, isn't it? It's just such a privilege to have been all working together. And also, you know, we must thank all our guests who've kindly given of their time and come along, and all our listeners too. That's all of you listening. So thank you very much indeed for coming on. So 150, it's sort of the end of an era or the end of a chapter?
I was going to say it's good news and it's bad news, isn't it? Well, it's both. The closing of one book and the opening of another. I think that's a good way of expressing it, Andrew. This will be the last episode of the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast in its current form, although the same hosts and format will be going across to a brand new podcast coming out in May 2024 called the Health and Self-Care Podcast. But we'll talk about that a little bit more towards the end. What are people's thoughts on that? The end of the era.
I'm amazed that we're still finding things to talk about each week and still getting great guests on and learning things. I don't know about everyone else, but I've learned so much as co-presenter from our guests. It's been a fantastic journey for me.
And as somebody who's come a little bit late to the party, I find it extraordinary the wide range of topics that you've covered and the absolutely fascinating people. The guests that you've had on this show have been just so interesting, and you've covered such a wide range of topics. The subject social the mental health sort of sounded a bit dry when we first looked at it, but actually it covers so many different topics, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well, we started in a way early in the pandemic as a morale booster, but it's just taken on a life of its own. And it's just been such a privilege, as you say, Peter and Kate, to have some fantastic guests.
And of course, now we've got the new podcast coming out, we can revisit all those topics again. Now, there's always something new to say, and that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Even if we've covered a subject a couple of times, there's always new developments, there's always new thinking, world events happen and change around us. So there's always something to talk about in this space. So yeah, very much looking forward to going forward with the new era and revisiting some of those and shedding new light.
And you're saying it's taken on a life of its own. David, you've got some interesting statistics about how many countries we've been listened to in, how many people. Is this a good time to share that, or do you want to save that up till later?
Yeah, sure. But I just wanted to, before we do that, just to say, you know, thank you very much, Kate, for coming on board as our newest co-host in the team as well. Really, really great. Every episode you've been on so far has been really well received, and I've enjoyed being your first listener every time. And wonder if you wanted to expand on your experiences, or if you had any particular favourites of the episodes you've recorded so far, Kate?
Well, So I started as a guest on this program when talking about neurodiversity and neurodivergence, which is a topic that is very close to my heart. And then after that, you invited me to come and be a host. And when I first started, I wasn't really aware of the breadth of ideas and topics that three GPs can cover with the right guests. So I've really enjoyed the aspect of this role, which is an expansion of my role as a GP, seeing and talking to individual patients, as being talking to all sorts of people and covering a much wider range of issues than I can normally manage in my 10-minute consultation.
That's brilliant. I think we also need to say thank you to our other hosts or significant figures in the history of the podcast. We had Dr. Lorna Stewart. She's featured on a couple of episodes and sort of around in the earlier days more. And then obviously Dr. Sarah Coop as well came in later and did a fantastic job of the few episodes she had so with us. So yeah, very grateful to everybody who's played a part.
And of course, in our new format going forward, hopefully we'll have freedom to spread things even wider and have a greater variety of topics. And I think we're always interested, aren't we, if anybody has any particular suggestions to hear from listeners with particular things that they'd like to hear.
Definitely right. And I think that's one of the key things you're going to notice with the new health and self-care podcast is this. We're going to be doing a lot more work to build and share with our community of listeners. So we want to give people more opportunities to become involved, ask questions, to suggest guests and topics, and to come on the podcast themselves if they're an expert in something that they want to talk to us about. So yes, a very exciting opportunity.
And just picking up that, David, and the comments that you made, Kate, I was first did some radio in Somerset nearly 20 years ago, which was quite an experience. But you realise that it's an authentic conversation between two people. It's just, or three people, or four people. It's just that the audience is rather big. So everyone out there who's listening, we're really grateful to you, and we're delighted to share what we talk about with you, because it is for you, but it's a discussion that we're privileged to have, and we can see each other.
Worth mentioning too that none of our guests receive payment for coming on here. They're not promoting anything. They're just doing it for the public interest, really, as we all are, of course. We don't get paid either. We've no intention of changing that in the in things going forward. We're not going to have advertising or anything like that. So even if people disagree with what we say, they know that just like when we're in our role as NHS GPs, we're not saying it from a particular perspective. We have no axe to grind. We're just trying to do our best.
Indeed, yes, always ad free for everyone, and that will be the same on our new show as well. So yeah, very much public service broadcast, but yeah, many more opportunities to get involved coming up. And Andrew, I think you've given me two segues there into the stats, so let's get on with it. So we'll talk about our top. So in episode 50 and 100, we like to look back over the previous 50 or the whole body of our material and have a look to see what people have been enjoying the most. So I can give us a rundown of our top 10 episodes, but we won't labour it as much as before because afterwards we've got some really exciting questions from listeners that we'd like to get to respond to. So we'll just give that a quick run
So
through.
top 10 sounds rather fun. Pick of the pops or pop of the pick.
Yeah. All the pop pickers out there, indeed. So I can tell you that in at number 10 was our reflections on COVID episode. Which was a very important one, I think, for us to do at the time, and actually something we've sort of revisited very recently with our the breathtaking episode that's come out, and I think that's an area that we could always expand on. So that was in at number 10. Number 9 was the early dementia, posterior cortical atrophy. Is that the right way to say it, Peter?
Absolutely, yes.
That was an interesting one. Do you remember that one?
I do, yes. And it seemed a little bit niche, didn't it? But actually, it seems to have gone down very well, and makes me think maybe we should do more disease-specific podcasts in the future, and particularly for people who have contact with it or experience of it. It's nice to have that information on things that isn't always available elsewhere.
And that actually covers an area I'm quite interested in, which is understanding people's experiences of disease, being able to talk to people about how their illnesses have affected them. So hopefully we'll have more opportunities to do something like that going forward.
Excellent. And coming in at number 8.
I was going to say, we had Dr. Michael Staunton on that episode, and he was quite an interesting guest. So go and have a listen to that one if you haven't yet. It's definitely worth a listen, that one. Number eight, we've got hoarding disorder, which was another very interesting episode. And again, that's one that I think we could go back to again and again. There's a lot more to talk about there. But what's the
It
proper
is, and
name
it's not,
for
it's
it?
Diogenes
Diogenes
syndrome.
syndrome, which is very unfair. Because it's named after the philosopher Diogenes, who didn't live in a barrel. Or no, he lived in a barrel, but he didn't hoard, did he? So I don't quite know why it's Diogenes
Well, I'm not letting
syndrome.
my wife listen to that one in case she sort of finds out my foibles about the various things I've collected over the years. Anyway.
That's an interesting point, Andrew, because it's something that kind of overlaps psychiatry, mental health, and normality. And it's not quite in any camp, is it? So it's a very interesting example
Isn't that the
of that
case?
grayer.
Yeah. Isn't that the case of a lot of mental health problems, is that they're often on a spectrum which ranges from normal to completely interfering with your life and all points in between?
Absolutely. And as we always say, things like depression and anxiety are, they have a physiological function. There's a reason why we are prone to that. It's just that in some people it becomes incapacitating. So it's a very interesting discussion. These things aren't black and white, are they?
They
On
are.
that one, I had some very interesting thoughts about. There's a Nick Knowles program about decluttering on Channel 5 that have seemed to be sort of provoking their ire. So that, again, that's worth listening to if you haven't had a chance.
And just going back to spectrums, we're all on a spectrum of confidence, and they say that the prevalence of imposter syndrome is something like 70%. So, here we are. Privileged, dear listeners, for you to be listening to us, and we're thinking here, well, we've between us we've got 120 years of medical experience, but we still suffer from imposter syndrome at times.
And then, so in at number seven, we've got dealing with stress. That was one of our oh, it's not that early, episode 52, I think. But that one was a really important one, I think, at the time. And that one just keeps the numbers keep ticking up, so people are finding that and listening to it regularly. So I wouldn't be surprised if that gets to number one maybe one day. But it's definitely picking up speed, that one. Was that a two-hander? I can't remember now. Anyway. Number six, we've got reversing pre-diabetes. Now that one is a mover and a shaker. That was actually episode 82, so that's the most recent one that's in the top 10, and that one has been climbing and climbing. So people are really finding that one and getting a lot of use out of that episode. It was a really practical episode, I think, with the about advice that was in the show. Who was our guest for that one? Can you
I
remember?
think that was Dr. Campbell Murdoch from
Oh.
Somerset, who's put together some great resources, and his latest resources is prediabetes.guide, which is a free resource for people to access to learn about prediabetes and what they can do about it.
And I think that's an area, isn't it, where our knowledge has evolved. And we were probably taught that once you get diabetes, that's it. You go on medication to control it. But the idea that you could actually reverse it and get rid of it with diet wasn't on our radar at all until very recently. And people like David Enwin have shown that he's reversed, I think, 50% of his patients. So it's a real eye-opener that you're taught stuff, but then knowledge shifts. The evidence base changes, and we have to change with it. And it's a very positive message.
Definitely.
We may be ahead of the textbooks here in what we discuss. So,
ahead of our
hopefully,
time.
always.
In at number five. Oh, yes, we're in the top five now, aren't we? So, in at number five was alcohol and mental health, which was our earliest episode about that. And that was during the height of the pandemic. But we've since had on alcohol, and we've had alcohol and recovery, which was another one. And they're all good. But for me, the alcohol and recovery one was really, really good. That we had that. That person came on who's an expert by experience to share her experiences of alcoholism. And for me, it was just so powerful, that one. That's definitely worth listening to.
Yeah, that's one that sticks in my memory as well. She was absolutely brilliant, wasn't
She
she? And
was.
so honest. And to me, most of the really, really good episodes have been people who've been there and gone through it and come out the other side and can share their experiences, often very, very powerfully and bravely.
Yeah, definitely. Just to say that the guest on that episode was Sally. That's it. So, and we had Carl Morrison from Public Health who came on that one as well. So thank you, Carl and Sally, for your appearances. Really good. That wasn't actually the episode that's in the top 10. We just giving a shout out to another one that we fancy instead, but that's fine.
So we move on to in at number four.
Yeah, number four is happiness, which is one of my personal favorites because I think it's something we will do more of, but taking something that is more of a, a positive thing or an emotion and then sort of breaking that down as well. So we don't just kind of focus on the negative side of things. And that one is one that keeps people keep finding as well. That was a really good one.
And I remember doing all the research for that and sort of looking up the evidence and the data and so on, and being really amazed by what makes us happy and how most of us get it wrong. We chase the wrong sort of happiness. We chase the short-term pleasure instead of the long-term meaningful happiness. So it certainly shifted my way of thinking. I'm delighted that that's one of our popular ones.
That leads us, of course, straight on to number three, because one of the most important things about happiness is connection, connection to others, but connection to nature.
Andrew's got the list. Yeah, nature and well-being, topic we've revisited many times, but this one was a really good one and always worth talking about, always worth reminding people, particularly in our area or in other more rural areas, that what you've got out there on your doorstep can often help us to manage our well-being. So that was a great one. And then number two, moving on swiftly, demystifying the menopause. Again, one of the really powerful ones. We had Dr. Catherine Patrick on for that one, and that is well worth digging out. We've also just recently had the perimenopause well-being episode, and it's something we will come back to again and again because there's a lot of content to mine in that area, a lot of things to discuss and new developments all the time. So thank you, Catherine, for coming on that one. And then in at number one, top of the pops, deep dive into dementia. Still unshakable.
So Peter, that's you ahead of everybody else, top of 150.
Well, I'm delighted. I mean, to me, dementia is such an important topic. 900,000 people in the UK have it, leading cause of death, most feared diagnosis in the over 50s. Why are we not talking more about it? And as well, something where there's lots of myths that need busting. So the idea that it's an inevitable part of aging is just completely wrong. 40% reversible with lifestyle. So yeah, I'm sure it's a topic we'll return to many times, but I'm delighted that it's gained traction.
Thank you, Peter. So that's our top 10. So, David, where have people listened to us from? Because, it's called Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast, aimed perhaps at morale in Somerset, but it's not just Somerset people listen to us from, is it?
Sure, no, exactly. I had a big surprise a minute ago because I looked through every country where we've had at least one play, one listen, and there are 104 countries on that list, which is quite something. You look at it, quite, I'll admit, there are about 30 at the bottom with one, but up there it starts accelerating quite a lot. So thank you to everybody in all of those countries that has listened to the show. And just to run down the top 10, I'll go from 10 to 1. So 10 was Canada, 9 was China, 8 was Ireland, 7 was Spain, 6 was New Zealand, 5 was France, 4 was Australia, 3 was Singapore. Hello to Singapore, very popular there. 2 was the United States of America, and number 1 was the United Kingdom. So very good that we can, talk to the people we set out to talk to first, which was people in our local area and within the country more broadly. But really grateful to everybody who's found us from all around the world. And thank you for listening. And please do continue to listen to the Health and Self-Care podcast when it comes up.
And did any of those countries particularly surprise you, David?
Well, to be honest with you, I think I just said then Singapore at number 3. I think that's quite up to me. I would think that the most of our listeners would predominantly come from areas which were like it had English as a first language because we don't have other language versions of the podcast. But yeah, so to find Singapore there at number 3, I think is quite surprising to me. But very grateful to everybody in Singapore, and we're welcome to come and do a roadshow event or something over in Singapore if you'd like to invite us.
Just a sort of brief thing on languages. One of the problems of being in United Kingdom and growing up with English as a first language is that we are not very good at having other languages, whereas many, many countries have superb linguistic skills and have English almost, well, certainly it's a second language, but almost as good as their first. So I'm in awe of anybody who can speak more than one language, and grateful to all our listeners from everywhere for coming and joining us.
And so now we've got 10 minutes or so left, and we've got 6 questions from our listeners. Some of them are actually outstanding ones still from episode 100 that we didn't get to, but we've had a couple others in. I've added to the list. So I'll pick some. Unless, were there any particular ones that you guys wanted to make sure we cover? Was there anything that you wanted to go for first, or shall I just pick some?
I quite like
Exercise
it.
over 60.
Yes,
All right,
that was the one
traumatize
that
it me.
appealed to me as well.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, let's go for that one first then. So I'll read the question out and we'll go for that first, and then I'll pick a couple other ones. So the first question is, I'm just about to turn 60. What are the best ways to look after my mental health as I get older? Should I exercise more or follow a certain diet? Should I do anything special when I retire? I hear that you have to keep mentally active. Thank you. Love the show. Well, thank you for the comment.
So can I jump in on that one? So certainly exercise. So long as we don't rush into things and step our exercise up, exercise absolutely important at 60. I'm older than 60 and I still do my black belt karate training. So it's never too late to start. And increasingly, strength exercises seem to be important in reversing the sarcopenia, the muscle loss that we get as we get older. Kate, do you want to take over in terms of
Yes.
mental health and
Well, mental health, but also touching back on exercise, I think exercise is incredibly important, but it's also very important that we're not tempted to try and do more than we can and then disappoint ourselves. So quite often when people reach retirement age, they become very, and also women reach the menopause, they suddenly become very enthusiastic about exercising because they realize they need to do it for their health. They launch into an exercise regime which is far too difficult from the outset, and then get put off after a few days, and then don't do any exercise. So I think exercise is incredibly important, but do the exercise you enjoy. It should be fun. It should be something you can sustain. And it doesn't really matter what sort of exercise you do, as long as you're enjoying it and you manage to keep it going. Peter, do you have something to add by that?
just moving on to nutrition, really. I think you covered
Sorry,
that very well.
can I just come back to exercise and say that many types of exercise are beneficial, but the strongest evidence base, and this may surprise us, is actually for dancing. Now, apparently it's very good for balance as well as all sorts of activities. This is an Andrew conjecture theory, so it might be completely wrong, but I suspect the fact that it's social and that it's to music may well help as well. So you're ticking lots of boxes of supporting ourselves.
And often it's something that you've signed up to do every week, so you're committed to doing it regularly if you go to, tea dance or afternoon dances or whatever. Gardening, I think, is another exercise that's underrated because it's again, it's one that you have to sustain, you have to keep doing it.
So
Nutrition, I think, Peter, you were going to.
nutrition, yes, there's this concept, isn't there, of inflammaging, the idea that inflammation actually speeds up the aging process. So I think the advice we'd give for nutrition is the same for somebody at 60 as it would be younger, but that it's even more important. So for me, it's about reducing the amount of sugar and carbohydrates in our diet, for having foods that are anti-inflammatory. Whether it's oily fish or extra virgin olive oil, lots of vegetables, not too much of it because we know that obesity is a big driver of ill health. Kate, you wanted to add
Yeah,
something?
interesting. I was at a meeting earlier this week. We were talking about nutrition and all the different messages we're giving people around nutrition, which can sometimes get quite complicated. And we'd started talking about how to lose weight and whether diets were good. The biggest messages, take home message I took from that meeting was let's increase our whole grains. And let's not eat processed food, ultra processed food. And if you can do those two things, if you increase your whole grain intake, you're increasing your fiber intake, so you feel full, so you're less likely to crave sugar, and other sweet things. And if you eat, yes, that was the main one, really. So whole grains, we worked out for Somerset. So the lady from Public Health was pointing out that in Somerset, the one thing we could do to improve the health of all of our people would be to get them all to eat more whole grains. So
Porridge oats.
oats instead of biscuits, instead of cereal.
David, what other questions are there for us to answer?
I think this one's a really important one to answer. I think so again, it's a great show. I really loved your episodes on the menopause and it got me thinking. Can menstrual cycles affect mental health? Does anxiety increase in relation to monthly hormonal changes?
Absolutely, yes. two aspects to it. If you have a mental health condition, it will be influenced by your menstrual cycle. And that we've all heard of premenstrual tension, and there is a more severe version as well. But yes, there are cyclical changes related to progesterone and estrogen, which change during your month. And they can affect you, both your mood and how you're feeling physically.
Probably worth throwing in there, Kate, that in terms of HRT, there are different progestogens and estrogens, aren't they? And not it's not suitable for everyone. Sometimes you need to have different ones to get that balance right. Otherwise, you can have
Absolutely.
ill
And the
effects.
same with the oral contraceptive pill, because of course the oral contraceptive pill got progesterone in it. And some people have terrible mental health problems on certain types of oral contraceptive.
Definitely a topic to look at in our new series.
Absolutely.
Definitely. No, really interesting. I don't think a lot of people know that. I mean, I certainly didn't. So that's really interesting. Thank you. Okay, so this one's a bit of a long one. I might abridge it a bit, but what is phantom pain, please? My sister always complains she has really severe pain in her wrists and neck, but the doctors can never find a cause. Is that what phantom pain means? I'll just leave it there. The person says that she suffers from anxiety and depression. Could that be the real cause? And sometimes it can cause panic attacks.
Can I jump in on this one? Because I'm interested in this idea of chronic pain. I've done some research on it. More and more, we're recognizing that pain is something that has produced more in the brain than it is in the body. So yes, we have these pain fibers that tell us when something bad is happening. But if that happens over a period of time, it's as though the brain becomes sensitized to that. People say it's like a car alarm going off, and you get this false alarm. So people are waiting for the next time it goes off. So more and more, we recognize that the chronic pain, phantom pain, is due to that. You get this other thing, of course, called phantom limb pain, where you have a limb that's been amputated, but you still get sensation in it. But that's a slightly different mechanism. And we do know that people vulnerable to chronic pain are more likely to be anxious or depressed because that seems to affect the way the brain filters those signals. It's not to say it's made up or all in the mind, but it's mo moderated by what's going on in the brain.
Yes. And I think the message is, although you're feeling pain in your wrist, the problem isn't something mechanical in your wrist. It's how your brain is interpreting the messages it's getting. And I think there's been some research into fibromyalgia in particular, which is looking at microglial inflammation. So the cells within the brain that support the nerve fibers are your microglia. And there is a suggestion that if these become inflamed, the part of the brain they're serving will send you a message that says you're getting pain in part of your body. Of course, it's been historically very difficult to research the brain because you can't just chop it open and have a look at what's going on. But they do functional MRI scans, which look quite exciting and are developing at the moment. So I think it's watch this space. We're going to understand more about fibromyalgia and other sorts of pain quite
And
soon.
again, I feel this is an episode that we need to have a whole 30 minutes on, isn't it? Because it's a very important topic. And also the idea that you shouldn't simply ratchet up analgesics with somebody with chronic pain, because that is not actually helpful. It
And
just
they
gives
don't
them
actually
addiction.
work because
No.
it's the analgesics are work in a different way than this pain can respond to. Quite a lot of the painkillers that people take for these sort of pains are actually designed to numb your brain, which then interferes with how you function in life in general.
That's really interesting. I mean, I didn't know any of that. I am always the idiot in
Guinea
the room, but
pig.
I really, yeah, exactly. But that was really interesting. Definitely whole episodes to come on that in the new show. And that brings me on to the end of this episode. And first thing to say is, again, thank you to everybody for listening to this episode, for listening to all of the 150 episodes that we put out there. And just to let you know, again, this is not the end. Continue to listen to the Health and Self-Care podcast. It will be coming out first episode in May 2024. It will be on the same RSS feed for those who know the technical stuff as this episode. So if you're already subscribed to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing podcast, you will be subscribed to the new podcast when it launches. If you haven't yet subscribed, please hit that button now and you'll come straight with us. You don't even need to do anything. We'll do it all for you. If you are looking for us in the future, we will have a website which should be healthandselfcare.com. And that's where the home of the podcast will be. And there'll be lots of opportunities to get involved with the community and things moving forward. But thank you to everyone who sent us their questions. And we really look forward to hearing from you in the future and expanding on that in future episodes. So thank you, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And thank you, David. Thank you, Peter. And thank you, Kate. And go well, everybody.
Bye all.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. The show was hosted by our team of doctors, including Dr. Andrew Tresidder, Dr. Peter Bagshaw, and Dr. Kate Staveley. The show was produced by Rob Huns Music on behalf of the NHS Somerset Integrated Care Board.